Are we in 95.3? Okay, let's see. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Read the translation to this paragraph 95.2 again. And so, for the revelation of the two objectives of practical realization and the confidential essence to be achieved, the Vijnana and Mahasya, the Lord gives a benediction. Yavanaham yatabhavo yadrupa munakarmakaha tataiva tatva vijnanam astute madanugrahat. All of me, namely my actual eternal form and my transcendental existence, color, qualities, and activities, let all be awakened within you by factual realization out of my causeless mercy. Okay, now explaining that. How much I am means what my extent is in my essence. In what way I am, that means what kind of existence I have, or in other words, what my characteristics are, which visible forms I have belonging to my inner self, such as my form with dark blue complexion, and my form with four arms. Oh boy, is that two different forms? I think the forearm form has a dark blue complexion. Hold on one second. Yeah, but it, the way it's said, it could be that the same one form is Shyama and Chaturbhuja, and then other ones also. I think that's the fact. Because the forearm form of Vishnu is also dark blue. Maybe not as dark as Krishna, but still pretty dark. All right. And what activities, what various pastimes, plus factual realization, perception which agrees with the facts. May you have all this by my favor. This automatically refutes the message of the four-verse Bhagavatam. No, it refutes the possibility that the message of the four-verse Bhagavatam could be about a formless truth. The same personality of Godhead who gave these instructions of the four-verse Bhagavatam will later speak to Uddhava in the verse beginning Pura Maya. The words, the supreme knowledge which reveals my glories. The term factual knowledge implies that his personal form and so on belong to his inner Hare Krishna. I've got a problem. My son put Windows 7 on here. Yeah. And every time I try to save the file, it crashes. And so, excuse me. I had to reopen the phone. It's tough because I can't make any changes. Okay. I found the file is open, but now I got to go down there and find the place. And. Okay, it looks like it was saved. Okay. Fine. We'll later speak to Uddhava, but I have here spack to Uddhava, so let's add the E. Later speak to Uddhava in the verse beginning, Puramaya, the word supreme knowledge, which reveals my glories. The term factual knowledge implies that his personal form and so on also belong to his inner essence. Here the blessing for realization is obvious, And there is also a blessing in connection with the confidential essence. But that's not obvious, that's implied. There's no mention about bhakti in this verse, but it's implied. Because pure love will necessarily develop when one has obtained the supremely blissful correct perception of the facts about these matters. If you get to know Krishna as he is, you have to become attracted to him if you have actual information. And now we didn't read the commentary. So, a student of the science of Godhead who is not yet very mature in his study will understand only theoretically the transcendental nature of God's existence and that of his qualities, forms and activities. But with the blessings of the Lord, which Brahma is here receiving from him directly, but most candidates receive from a representative devotee of the Lord. Okay. Blessings of the Lord. Brahma is receiving them directly. Most candidates receive them from a representative devotee of the Lord. With those blessings, the student can graduate from jnana to vijnana or personally realized experience. You want to, what makes jnana turn into vijnana is blessings of the devotee. In the higher studies of bhakti, one develops in progressive steps the taste for the process of devotional service and subsequently the taste of attraction to the object of devotion himself. This is ruchi and rati. Ruchi is attachment, or asakti is attached, ruchi, is attached, attraction to the process. Higher than that is attraction to Krishna directly. That's actually asakti or rati. What is the extent of the Supreme Lord and his energies? He and they are infinite. He and his energies may voluntarily submit to the limits of time and space, but only as they choose for their pleasure. The Supreme Lord is the source of everything in the material and spiritual creations. He has countless other forms, countless qualities, and countless pastime activities. The bhava, or special character of his being, is that without any restriction, he is absolutely independent, all-knowing, and all-powerful. In contrast to Bhagavan in his full glory, his non-differentiated Brahman feature has no gunas, no rupas, and no karmas. Yet rupa guna karmaka. So Narayan is talking about himself with all these qualities. Not without them. Tattva vijnana, personal realization of God's nature, is authentic only when it is factual experience of his inner essence. Experience of the external varieties of material existence are only a counterfeit of true tattva vijnana. So if you want real tattva vijnana, it has to be a knowledge of Krishna, his internal nature, not his external material nature. If Brahma achieved true tattva vijnana, as promised to him by his Lord, then what he realized was the Lord's qualities, forms, and activities, not as material dualities, but as spiritual varieties of the Lord's sarupa. And much later in the course of material time, Lord Narayan, in his original form of Krishna, will again reveal these glories of his to his servant and trusted friend, Uddhava. Krishna will remind Uddhava of his earlier revelation to Brahma. Krishna told Uddhava, Puramaya proktam ajayanabhye padme nishannaya mamadi sarge Gyanam paramam mahima vabhasam yat surayo bhagavatam vadanti. O Uddhava, in the lotus millennium, in the days of yore, at the beginning of the creation, I spoke unto Brahma, who is situated on the lotus that grows out of my navel. about my transcendental glories, which the great sages describe as Srimad Bhagavatam.
What are days of yore?
Y-O-R-E. I don't even know what that means. It means really old days, but I don't know where it comes from. The days of yore. I'll look it up in the dictionary. What is it? Old what? Old days, okay. Right. It's old days, but I don't know the origin of the word. Okay, any questions? Yeah, you should practice, you should ponder. Think about what you've studied, what you've been told. You should think deeply about it. That's also part of the process. You should do that also. But ultimately the knowledge will not take root in your heart unless you get the blessing through your teacher. You have to go through all the steps of studying. And Nididhyasana is one of the steps. You know, deep pondering. But that's not the crucial thing. The crucial thing is pleasing the instructor. Yes. But it's not, you can't please the Vaishnavas by crooked means. They don't take bribes. They are responsible to see that you actually satisfy Krishna, then they're pleased. Okay.
The last paragraph of the three Vyanas, it says the factual experience of his inner essence. This inner essence is a translation of Swarupa?
Yeah, it's a hard word to translate. Actually, I try to avoid that kind of phrasing, inner essence. It sounds vague. But
his inner essence is like,
well, it's a capital H. It's not his own, it's not the Jiva's own, it's just the Supreme Lord's inner essence. Well, because God has an inside and outside in the sense of he has his material energy and spiritual energy. That's the point here, is that if you just realize God's material energy, that's not vijnana. This is mundane knowledge. When you're dealing with the Lord's personal qualities, his personal form, his personal activities, that's Swarupa. Maybe I should say personal instead of inner essence. Personal existence. Let me trace this back. I have to do a search and see when I start using this word essence. Maybe I should get rid of it. It's too vague. Because, is there something hidden inside Krishna, some special substance or something, essence? Yeah, see, it's in my translation. How much I am, yata bhavo, I mean, yavam, sarupato yat pani manako. Sarupato, I translate that as, what extent is in my essence? Okay, I'm going to make a note that better I don't use. To use essence here and inner essence in the commentary. I'll think of a better way to say it. The real distinction is between his personal nature and his external material nature. That's what we're really talking about. Maybe I should make it clearer. Jiva Goswami is just talking in terms of Swarupa. It's a technical term, it's hard to translate into English. Okay, we're going to move into the next paragraph. Tadupadeshya chatushtaya chatushlokya nirupayam pratamam jnana vijnanartam svalakshanam pratipadayati dvabhyam. Okay, there are four things to be instructed. Thus furthermore, the Lord, intending to elucidate in these four verses, the four topics of instruction. What is it? There's Jnana Vijnana, the Rahasya, and the Angas. Yeah. So intending to do that, first of all, the Lord formulates in two verses a definition of himself to facilitate knowledge and realization. So knowledge, jnana and vijnana, are supposed to be jnana and vijnana about Krishna. So Krishna, first of all, or Narayan, gives information about himself. So we can have some jnana and then some vijnana about him. He says, tatra jnanartamaha. So first, in one verse, he gives us the knowledge, the information we need for developing jnana, theoretical knowledge. Aham eva sameva gre nanyadyat sarasat param paschad aham yadi tatcha yo vishishyeta sosmyaham. It is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself, nor were there causes and products of material nature, nor the unmanifest which lies beyond both. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Hear the word I refers to the speaker of these words. Atra aham shabdena aham evasam, the word aham. Tatvakta morta evochyate na tu nirvishesham brahma tat avishayatvat. Here the word I refers to the speaker of these words, who is an embodied being, not formless Brahman. Atma jnana tatparyakatve tu tatvamasi iti vat tvam eva asir iti eva vaktam upayukta tvat. If this verse, since the impersonal supreme cannot be the reference of the word I, okay? You can't. Brahma doesn't talk, so he's never the first person. Hi. If this verse was meant to indicate knowledge of oneself, the jiva knowing himself, it would have been more suitable to say you alone were existing in the beginning. As in the statement, you are that, tatvamasi. So Tatvamasi is, Shweta Keta is being instructed about self-realization, about realizing himself. You are not different from the Supreme. But now, we're not talking about the jiva realizing himself, we're talking about the jiva realizing Narayan. So therefore it said, I was there in the beginning, not you were there in the beginning. Tatashchayam artaha samprati bhavantam prati pradu bhavant asau paramanohara shrivigraho ham evagri maha kale pi asam eva. Here the, if this, no. Thus the following is implied. This person, myself, appearing now before you in my supremely attractive bodily form, was alone present even in the beginning, during the period of the universe's total dissolution. So he just says the word, aham. But in the context, it's Brahma getting darshan of Lord Narayan for the first time. So Brahma gets the impression, this wonderful, beautiful person I'm seeing in front of me who's talking to me, he says that only he was there at the beginning of creation. It's not just a theoretical statement. He's getting a very vivid impression because Narayan himself is saying this to him in person. And such is stated, the idea that Narayan said that I was there alone in the beginning is confirmed by various scriptures. Shrutis. Vasudevo va idam agra asin na brahma na cha shankaraha eko narayana asin na brahma nishana. Those are two Shruti statements. Vasudeva alone existed in the beginning, not Brahma nor Shankara. And only Narayan was existing, not Brahma or Ishana. So some Upanishads say Sat alone was there in the beginning. Maybe taken impersonally. But to clarify the matter, these two Upanishads, there are the the Maha Upanishad and the Chandogya Upanishad, these are the two Upanishads being quoted. They're saying, no, not impersonal, it's Narayan, Vasudev, who was there alone. And we can't deny the Chandogya Upanishad. It's one of the 11 major Upanishads. Maha Upanishad is also accepted. And it is also Bhagavan Eka Asedam Agra Atman Manam Vibhu Ityadi Tritiyat. And in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, the personality of Godhead, the master of all living entities, existed prior to the creation as one without a second. Not only Shruti, Bhagavatam also confirms it was the personality of Godhead who was there all by himself at the beginning of creation. Okay. Commentary. Both in the verse beginning Aham Eva Asam and the verse following it, which we haven't gotten to yet, Lord Narayan imparts knowledge of himself, which various hearers may understand on either level of jnana or vijnana. The next verse, however, specifically contrasts the reality of the personality of Godhead with the illusion of his maya. Full vijnana is possible for someone only after that person's illusions are dispelled. Impersonal Brahman cannot assume the first person voice of I. If Brahman was to do so, that would remove the disguise of impersonality from his inner self of Bhagavan. So actually, Brahman is Bhagavan. He could say I, he could talk. But if he does, that spoils the role. He's not acting like Brahman anymore. He could do it, but it's out of character. Only misled thinkers propose that the impersonal pretends to become a person, and that all personality, even God's, is nothing but illusion. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyante mama buddhayaha. Unintelligent men think that I was impersonal before, and have now assumed this personality, Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter. The word aham, or I, which Lord Narayan uses in this verse of the Chatukshloki Bhagavatam, just like the word mom, which Lord Krishna uses repeatedly in the Gita, does not stand for the spirit soul in general. Indifferently, either the supreme soul or the finite soul, because the verb asam, I was, in the Chatukshloki, is a first person form, not the second person, you. You could say aham, like ahankar is a noun, and ahankar could be in the third person. And you can even take the word aham and have it as a short form for ahankar. You could call the jiva the aham. But it's not what's being done here. Aham is being here used here as the first person pronoun. Because the verb is in the first person, asam. In one of the impersonalist favorite passages of the Chandogya Upanishad, in the 6th chapter, Shvetaketu's father teaches him about the transcendental nature of Brahman and the qualitative equality of Brahman and the finite soul. Tatvamasi Shvetaketo. My dear Shvetaketu, you are that. In this statement, tat, that, refers to the supreme soul, and tvam, you, to the finite soul. Impersonalists read this as indicating the completely literal identity of the two souls. But the theists more correctly understand it as saying that the two individual entities, that and you, are one in quality. And furthermore, that the entity you belongs to the entity that. By logical implication in the first verse of the Chatukshloki, you is also brought together with that, speaking in person as I. Ooh. Well, if you turn the that into I, because the that is speaking here, Narayan is speaking, then when Lord Narayan tells Brahma, I, the same personal Lord you see now, and I'm alone, present before and after the material creation. And what you see now, the causal elements and the perceivable things these elements produce, is nothing separate from me. So, aham evasam evagre, he doesn't say, you see me, but it's implied. The pronoun aham, or even the pronoun tad, tad means, or etad means what's close. Tad means what's far away. And aham, when a person's talking, that's the person talking. So the person hearing will recognize that aham refers to the talker. But that, by convention, is the meaning of the first person aham. So although he doesn't say, you see me, but it's implied by Krishna, by Narayan, telling Brahma, calling himself aham. It's implied. Me, the one that you're seeing right now in front of you. That's implied. The one who's talking to you. Just like vocative. What's the purpose of a vocative? It doesn't add anything to the grammar or the syntax. Right? It has no connection to the syntax. Doesn't help the verb, doesn't help the subject. What's the use of having a vocative? Does it express anything? So one suggestion is express, I'm talking to you, please listen. You know, it's to get the attention of the person. Please listen to me. Or sometimes more is indicated, like parta, O Arjuna. You know, you should be in the mode of goodness, Arjuna. Because you're parta, you're the son of a noble lady. You should be noble. So sometimes some implication is there in the vocative. But minimum, the vocative is expressing, I'm talking to you, please listen. Okay, any comments? Yes.
You write, the entity you belongs to, the entity that, I've seen that many of my Chandrachakravarti, he said, Tadvamasi means you are his. But I don't really understand how it's understood grammatically. I haven't seen that in books. Can you please explain this?
Well, I think that goes back to both Ramanuja and Madhva, both give that argument. We'd have to go, I don't want to make up an argument. They already gave good arguments. I don't remember what they are. We can go back and look. How tattvamasi is properly understood as tasya tattvamasi. You belong to that. I don't know exactly what grammatical justification they give. Well, that's making a compound out of it. Well, then the twam is just a suffix twam. I don't think they say that. I don't think they try to make it work that way. Somehow the tut to mean tasya.
So in this case, that can mean tasya tvam.
But
tasya. So it's like.
But that's for samas. But this is not a samas really. Tattvam.
No, even for that samas, sometimes in English they can chop up all the shivatis.
Maybe that argument is given. Another argument that I now remember is given that it's not direct meaning, it's figurative meaning. The word tat, when the literal meaning doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense to say you are God. But God can stand figuratively for what belongs to God. Just like the village on the Ganga doesn't make sense literally. There's no village on top of the water, but it's on the shore that's next to the water. There's something connected to the Ganga. So Ganga figuratively refers to what's connected to the Ganga. And here, tat figuratively can refer to what's connected to tat. You're connected to, you're the property of tat. That's not a matter of the grammar, but of the lakshana vritti, figurative usage. When the literal meaning doesn't fit, there is a literal meaning, there has to be one, but it's just not appropriate to the situation. Well, Brahma realized Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then he got a vision of Vaikuntha. So, it's Vaikuntha not. It's, I don't know if it's any particular Narayan, but it's Narayan in Vaikuntha. Yes? It's not Narayan?
It was from Lord Narayan in the book of Mormon. Sorry, it was Lord Narayan in the book of Mormon, this case.
Yes. Yeah, because this is part, the first part of this chapter describes Brahma going to Vaikuntha. And he meets Narayan, and then Narayan talks to him. And this, in the discussion, he speaks for a verse moment. Okay. Yes.
Again, in this commentary, the word inner self is used. The first, I think the last paragraph.
I'm sorry, what word?
The first word Brahman cannot assume the first person voice of I. If Brahman would do so, they could remove the disguise of the first person.
I'm sorry, there's a lot of talking. Who's talking? Ask him not to talk out loud. Go ahead, please.
This is the last paragraph, second line. Commentary.
Was it somebody inside? Okay. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
If person Brahman cannot assume the first person voice of I.
Yes.
If Brahman would do so, that would remove the disguise of impersonality from his inner self or one. like this inner self, is it the same condition of Swarupa?
Yeah, okay. I'm falling into the habit here of using the phrase inner self. I should get rid of that. I'm marking it as something to be. I don't like it also. Let me just make a mark. Yes. Or the impersonal inside Krishna.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. Okay, yes,
please. Could you told that when literal meaning is not fitting, then you have to say anything?
No, not always. The author has to provide a figurative meaning. There isn't always a figurative meaning available in any case. It's that you can't expect the figurative meaning to work unless the literal meaning doesn't work. Figurative meaning can't become manifest until the literal meaning fails. It's like a substitute. So the substitute doesn't get a chance to act if the original one is there to act. Only when the original one is blocked, the original meaning, then the figurative meaning is allowed. If there is a figurative meaning, there isn't always one there. Just like I use a word that makes no sense. I use the wrong word. You know, just some, my mind, you know, some lapse in my mind and I use the wrong word for something. There's no figurative meaning, it's just I use the wrong word and it just doesn't make sense, period. But sometimes a poet will intentionally make something not make sense in the literal way because he wants to bring out a figurative meaning. But that has to be the intention of the author. That's poetry. When you start using words in figurative ways, you're starting to be poetic. Okay. But actually in common usage, even very ordinary people who are not poets, they use figurative language all the time. You know, stop tickling me, you're killing me. That's figurative. Yeah.
Yeah, I have this question because Hanuman Goswami says that there is a confusion between this, like, Lakshmi Pradipada, Lakshmi Pradipada, Tayopadipada, the same of Ranam. So if they, like, Lakshmi meaning and Pratipada meaning is primary and secondary meaning. Primary is always to be considered.
When there's a. Say it again, when there's a.
Lakshmi Pratipada is three or four.
Is this something different? Can you explain the difference? This is some grammatical technology, technical thing. It's not the same thing. All right. Any other questions? We don't have time now to get into the next paragraph. It's too long. So we can just general discussion, anything.
Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada in his translation of Bhagavad Gita, he translates Karma Yoga as Bhakti Yoga. So, and Vishwanath Chakravarti, his commentary actually explains it as Karma Yoga. So, can it be that it has both meanings?
Yes, Prabhupada is giving a different interpretation. Yeah?
The
actually, Baladeva also said that karma yoga is bhakti yoga. Okay, so they're not contradicting each other. Baladeva Vidushan is a disciple of Vishnu Chakravarti. He's not going to contradict his guru. But he's giving an alternative, a second way of looking at it. They're both valid.
So there can be a deeper meaning which different acharyas maybe.
Yes. But these acharyas are not disagreeing with one another. This is a disciple adding on to his guru. So it must indicate that Krishna meant for both meanings to be allowed without contradicting. I don't know if there ever was that much of a like fixed curriculum. You know, I think there was only a general pattern that grammar is studied, and then after that, student can specialize in either literature, kavya, or in darshan. And then in the darshans, there are the different schools of darshan to study. And in each school, there are maybe some different traditions, like if you study Mimamsa, there are different schools of Mimamsa, three different schools. You can pick one of the schools, or all three. And then within the schools, there's the original text, and then the commentary on the text, and the next commentary. So there's a sequence like that. But it's like a tree branching off in different directions. It's not like there's one curriculum for everybody. There's a whole network of literature. It's too much for anybody to study. You know, but you follow a certain branching off. You pick a field and then you specialize in that field and you branch off. And in Shastric education, it was not like getting a PhD where you read hundreds of books on a very small topic. You read everything that was ever written on some tiny topic. Rather, you read only a few books, maybe a dozen books in your whole education, but you read them in depth. Well, okay, see, our school is supposed to be focused on the study of Bhagavatam and becoming learned in the Bhagavatam and being equipped to teach the Bhagavatam to others. So, Hare Krishna. My computer is not happy. It's kind of giving all sorts of complaints there. I would say, after studying grammar, we should start studying the Sundarbhas. Of course, we're starting a little early. We're not waiting until you're done with the grammar. But after getting enough grammar that you can begin to follow the text, then it's time to start studying Sundarbhas. Because Sundarbhas, for us, are the basis for deep study of Bhagavatam, a deep analytic study of Bhagavatam. Sundarbhas are our basic text. If we just study the Sundarbhas and even nothing else, no other commentaries, then that's a solid education. For study of the Bhagavatam, our prime textbook is the Sundarbhas. Now, we're not sitting down and trying to read the Sundarbhas in the original Sanskrit, I'm giving you a translation, a commentary. It would be more difficult to sit down with the students and just dive right into the Sanskrit. Then we'd have to figure it out, like we're doing in our Tika class. We'd have to go through all these texts. It would take a lot of time, unless the students were very expert. We're not doing that. We're doing like a summary, like sort of like a Krishna book for the 10th canto. You've given a translation and commentary. Otherwise, we might, if we were going to go straight for the text, we would sit down and retreat our Swami's commentary. Because it's basic and more easy. If we had a 12-year course, we could do it like that. You know, we'll spend 3 years studying Sridhar Swami and then 8 years studying the Tsandarbhas. We don't have 12 years.
In future, it will be like that.
Yes?
In future, it will be like that.
I don't know. I don't know who's going to have 12 years to sit down and study. You know, if 5 billion people in the world are practicing Krishna consciousness, then we can have some devotees sit down and study for 12 years. But then the world's in an emergency situation. We don't have time. We don't have that kind of leisure. Sit and study for 12 years.
Because I was thinking that there's so many things to do, like study of grammar and study of Bhagavatam itself, and maybe teaching assignments or preaching Sandarbha. So I just want to know what is the picture of.
But it's really two basic subjects. Let's say even one basic subject, Bhagavatam. We're studying grammar to facilitate our study of Bhagavatam. So it's all just Bhagavatam. Siddhartha is the best textbook on Bhagavatam. Our focus is simply Bhagavatam. It's pretty simple. And, you know, we're trying to approach it to the original Sanskrit. Others can avoid the Sanskrit and just read it in translation. If we ever get these Sandarbhas translated, then devotees can study the Sandarbhas without knowing Sanskrit. Yes?
I think it was reason the origin of the system of Shiksha and Chandas, the common Bhunti, Yoksha and Kama, was meant in order to facilitate people to perform some yogis. So, the combination of all the study of Chandas and then the
Yeah, that's a Vedic system. Yes. We have two books, Gita and Bhagavatam. Everything else is based on them.
I think
for all three, study of the Sandarbhas would be very useful. Now maybe that study should be organized in a certain way, and we're just experimenting now, it's not very organized. So there's more organizing to do, more making it systematic. But basically, study of Sandarbhas can be the foundation for training up translators, preachers, and teachers. For others, Sandarbhas may be too tough. You know, so they can get it through Prabhupada's purports or some other books we write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that if somebody is interested in Sandarbhas reading next year, and then he misses some other things, his service may ending up doing that particular thing, like translation or something. But if you say that Sandarbhas are the basis for everything,
it can serve like that. Yeah. We can, you know, our higher education, you know, Sanskrit Shastric higher education, you know, can pretty much be based on the Sandarbhas. Someone else might take a different approach, but I think this is a good focus.
So this is more like the Bhavyas and Nyayas that also falls in this same category. heard next semester there is some.
Yeah, so as much as we can fit that in, but that will be secondary importance. Yeah, to round out the course and fill it out, we can add these other things. Because whatever I've been able to do in translating the Sundarbhas with all these technicalities, it helps a lot that I studied Nyaya and Kavya before. Mm-hmm. I can figure things out that I wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Okay.
So it helps in studying Sundarbhas to know something about, about the different philosophies and about the techniques of poetry. Yes. But what we're talking, I'm talking about this program in which the students are supposed to learn Sanskrit and then proceed. I'm not talking about education for devotees who aren't studying Sanskrit. Well, then learn enough Sanskrit that you don't need a translation. If I could handle it, if I wasn't overworked, I could continue giving all six Sundarbhas, even the ones I haven't translated, because I've studied them. I read them, so I can explain them. But it'll go slower, because I don't have a translation. I have to make up a translation on the spot. Could be none. But I think for now, I'm just going to finish the second Sundarbha and move on to something else, and let someone else, develop the Sundarbha course. Because if I don't do that, I'll never get I'll never get the rest of the Sundarbhas translated. How deep an overview you want. If you want a quick summary, I can give it to you. I just wrote the introduction to the Tapa Sundarbha. In that, there's a short summary of the six Sundarbhas. There's also probably a summary in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We could go through that if you want. But if you want in-depth discussion of what each Sundarbha is about, I can give you the table of contents that I'm working with. It's a list of topics of each of the Sundarbhas. You can take that file. Just remind me. Yeah, I'll give you the file. Okay, we stop now? Okay, I'm going to Delhi tomorrow, so I won't be here. And I think Matsya Prabhu had to run to Delhi too today, but I don't know, is he going to be back tomorrow or what?
He said he's going to take both classes.
Okay, tomorrow. Okay, so he'll be here tomorrow, but he's not here today. Is that right?
He is coming tomorrow.
Okay, Matsya Prabhu will be here tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Jai.